I'm really glad you tuned in for this episode of In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics, because our special guest, Ricardo Allen, is a special guy. Great football player, no question about it. But man, very, very intelligent. I got a teammate that you can count on. He wants to be a coach when he's done playing in the National Football League. He's got a lot of good things to say about his experiences, his teammates, what's going on with the Cincinnati Bengals. This will be an educational episode. Enjoy. Welcome to In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. We're in our beautiful studios once again, and I'm very, very grateful for the studios and very, very grateful for all of you viewers, listeners, and very, very grateful for our guest today, Ricardo Allen. This guy is a class act in every sense of the word. Professional football player, that's great, but even better human being, which is even better. Before we get dived into your football career, let's talk about your podcast. What are you doing with your wife, sir? What's up? What's going on there?
Oh, yeah. Me and my wife, we released a podcast about probably say a year and a half, 2 years ago. It was one off season, wanting to do something together. And, you know, we have a pretty decent following on, we would say, social media and stuff. And people always see that we just have like so much knowledge to share. We just feel like, you know, when you give knowledge, it always, you know, just comes back. And we think that's like one of our blessings, that we kind of just like pass knowledge, and it always seemed to come and find us too. And that's what we seem to like do on our podcast. We talk about like in the intro on our podcast, it talks about anything from changing diapers to playing in Super Bowl. So it's a wide range of like everything on it. It's a good show. It ended up getting much more pub than we were ever expecting. We haven't done anything recently, and we need to do a couple updates. I like to when football season come around, I try to focus on football as much as possible, so I try not to like ever overshadow it with a podcast or anything. So we haven't done as much, but we really enjoy it, and like to do it when we get some time.
What do you call your podcast?
It's called All In with the Allens.
All In with the Allens. Kind of like a slice of life. I mean, it's everything. Yeah. It's life in general, huh? Everything that everybody wants to know in their life. That's pretty cool. That's a great idea. So your wife is obviously talented as well, huh? I mean, it's not Ricardo. It's the wife, too.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I had to marry early. I knew I had found a good one, man. She, you know, a lot of people around the game like to say that they think I'm a pretty smart player in sense, and I think if we're comparing me and my wife, I'm not even on like the same level as her. So like I had to, just had to get somebody early. And then it's always good because I have three babies at home. I got somebody that's, taking care of the family and taking care of all the outside things. We do a lot of investing in all kinds of stuff. We do real estate. You know, I'm always bouncing from all kinds of different things. I'm actually studying to actually get my Series 7 license also to become a licensed financial advisor too. So I have so much going on all the time that I need someone strong as a partner to be able to handle, you know, everything else that is going on, because once football season come around, I have to give football my everything. But, you know, the other stuff doesn't also stop, because we know that football is now, but like after football, you know, it's a long life. So we always try to make sure that we're setting up for the right thing.
Absolutely. Life after football is key. You get done with football, you're still a young man, young human being, and man, setting yourself up, you're very, very smart for life after football. Take care of that part of it. Let's get into the football aspect of it a little bit. Let's go back to your collegiate career. You're at Purdue. You're an all conference player at Purdue. And during your playing days at Purdue, you are exposed to a coach by the name of Lou Anarumo, who is also at Purdue. So now Lou is your defensive coordinator here with the Cincinnati Bengals. Talk about the Purdue connection between yourself and Lou.
Oh, yeah. Me and Lou go way back. We go all the way back to, I think he was the first coach that I ever personally met that gave me a scholarship from a college.
Wow.
So, he was the guy who actually recruited me to go all the way down to Purdue. He would come down and see me play when I was at back in the day when I was at Mainland High School down in Daytona Beach. He would travel all the way down there to come and you know, see my games, and actually you know, just he was one of the coaches that always gave me confidence, because you know, I'm not the biggest, you know, I'm only, you know, 5'9" and probably 195 pounds soaking wet, like on my best day, you know. Right. And you know, going into college, it was you know, that's even now being like a developed NFL, you know, player. So going into college, it was much more a work of art, and it wasn't, I could tell you, it wasn't a boatload of coaches just out just looking for me. And Coach Lou always was the guy who you know, instilled confidence in me, always told me the truth. He never told me that I was just gonna come and play. Always told me that if I had the right attitude, the right effort, and the right you know, way of just handling the game and going with the game, I'd give myself a good chance. And I always liked that. I always liked that he's a straight shooter, you know. It's crazy that my wife's Italian and he's Italian. So, you know, it's something about it that I like. Italians, man, they're straight shooters, and you know, they tell you how they feel and what they mean, you know. So I've always had a good connection with that, and he's always done right with me. He took me from never having my high school, my name in the high school paper at all. Like, my name was never in the high school paper down where I come from, and he took me to be, you know, like you said, an all-conference guy. Never scored an interception in high school, and when I was with him, I think I had 3 pick sixes, you know, early in my career. And you know, he always just known to put me in the right spot, and he was one of the coaches that realized that he can put a lot on my plate at an early age. And I think it's a big reason why I am still who I am, and I'm in the NFL now.
Man, it's always great to have somebody that is a believer in what you are and what you're about, and a mentor type guy. That's a phenomenal deal. Those 3 interceptions, those pick sixes, that's a record. Is it still a school record? I know it was when you did it. Is it still a school record?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think no one got it yet. I got it up to 4. When I was with him, I had got 3 pick sixes. I had to do a little something when he left. I couldn't just let it all be him the whole time, you know? So yeah. I had to do a little something when he left. So I had got 1 more after he left, and I think it still might be a school record.
I like that. That's great. So you would get drafted by the Atlanta Falcons in the 5th round in 2014. And you play in the Super Bowl with the Atlanta Falcons in Super Bowl 51, I think it was, and losing overtime to the New York Patriots. I mean, a heartbreaking loss. I mean, I went to Super Bowl and lost. I lost 5 points. You know, you lose the Super Bowl by a score or less, it's like, oh, man, that's really tough pill to swallow. How hard was that Super Bowl experience?
Yeah, it was tough because, you know, to make it to the Super Bowl, like, everything has to be clicking right. Like, and that was the year that I feel like us as a team, we put it all together, and we did it all the way, you know, right, almost to the point of we never was trailing in the game until, you know, they won in overtime. And when you're going against one of the best, and, you know, Tom Brady's considered, you know, one of the best, maybe the best of all times. When you get to that level of competition, it is fun to be there, first of all, because you get to really feel and know what it takes to be there, you know. And then you also being up, that was a game that we was up 25 points, you know, and we ended up losing that game. And that game, like I tell my wife and I tell my babies all the time, like, that game has taught me something that later on in my coaching career and later on in, you know, my baby's lives or something like that, that I learned from that game, and is that you can never say that you're out of a fight, because at any given time, like, being on that Falcons team, I thought for sure we had that Super Bowl. And it's just something about going against Tom Brady that he would not give up. And if he just had a chance, he would not give up. And man, that game has taught me a lot. It, you know, it like you said, like, you gotta risk it. You know, like, he believes in the no risk it, no biscuit kind of thing too. And I remember it was a catch that Edelman had, and I was a part of the catch too. It was a ball that he threw into it was like a 2-man coverage with the corner playing underneath the slot, and he ended up tipping the ball up in the middle of the field. and Edelman ended up catching it. And I remember listening in an interview that Tom said in the first quarter, or maybe being closer in a game, he would never have thrown that ball. But because it's nothing else and there's nothing left, he's going to go and give it his all. He's going to throw the ball that he's not supposed to. And he ended up completing it. And it ended up being, you know, a part of the game that that was a big part of that game. So just being in that game in general, it gives you something that a lot of people can never say they've been in. And it also shows you that, I know we one step away from being that kind of team and being, you know, and getting there.
You mentioned your coaching aspirations. I know Lou Anarumo has mentioned that, you know, you're going to be a great coach. And he said, if I'm still coaching, I'm going to hire him. There's no doubt about that. What is it about coaching that intrigues you? And how has that desire affected the way you prepare as a player to play in football games in the NFL?
Yeah. So I come from a single parent mom. You know, I met my dad for the first time, I'd say, last year.
Wow.
And so, like, the first father figures that I ever had and the father figures I've known the most was always my football coaches. And I started playing football when I got into high school. So for the longest, I was kind of my mom was a single parent, you know, working 2 and 3 jobs. So I was kind of just like a kid, you know, floating through Daytona Beach, not with too much guidance. And, you know, I just happened to be one of the blessed ones that found football. And because I didn't have it, I held on to it as much as I could. And it ended up taking care of me. And sometimes it's not to say the same about some of the kids in the hood with as much freedom and as much time as I've had. And just the men that I bumped into, they were good, solid people. Football gives you a regimen. It gives you discipline. It gives you something to look for. It gives you things that a lot of things in this world don't give. And then just being able to be around the game. I love football. Like, I love competition. I believe football is kind of like a barbaric chess in a sense. So I see it in more just than players running, you know, them heads into themselves. I see like a little bit of the back and forth that kind of goes with the coaches too, when, you know, like the game planning. And what that helps me with right now is I'm able to obsessively study football as much as I want and know that what I'm studying now is going to be something that is a part of me forever. And even while I'm playing these games and learning and listening to, you know, coaches call plays and trying to figure out like why they call these plays at certain times, you know, what, you know, personnel they like, how to even build a team, like what characteristics of players you want on your team, you know, what type of players you want in certain situations, in certain, you know, scenarios, all kinds of things. Like I'm just studying every aspect of the game that I can. So later on when I have to pull from that, I'm a very well-rounded player and coach.
Right. You know, it's amazing. Your teammates talk about you and Mike Hilton with that football IQ and that football knowledge. And, you know, they talk about your thirst for knowledge, how you just can't get enough football. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. So during the course of the game, do you almost like try to think along with the coaches and say, okay, well, you know, I understand what they're doing here and let's make sure we all communicate it together and make sure we're all on the same page because I get what the coaches are trying to do here. Do you feel like that happens for you?
Yes, I do. I do. I think that is something that I kind of like try to align myself to be, because I always think about like if I was a coach right now, what kind of player would I want? You know, and I would want a player who, you know, has a feel for the game and can also communicate it to the ones, you know, who are playing with them. And like even when I'm out there on the field and I'm always looking at the tablets and I'm always listening and to the adjustments that the coaches are making. And then I go to scrolling and looking through maybe some of the pictures that, you know, they sometimes have on the Microsoft tablet of that the other team is running against us. And I sometimes see maybe we out of a position on this one, or maybe we were too aggressive on this play. And I would know that maybe the offense may be setting up a counter play or something like that. And I talk about that, you know, I might mention that to a lot of the players, or even just you know, adjustments and defenses that sometimes we have to switch to, because during the game, you know, they may be presenting some unscouted looks that you didn't see or plan for, and you got to be able to adjust. And I think one of the best teams is the team who can adjust and adapt on the run, and I think that's something that I can help the team with a lot.
No question about it. I mean, there's teammates respect smart teammates, coaches respect smart players. I mean, just that takes you a long way, and that keeps you around too. I know that you have to be able to compete physically. You have to be able to play, but if you can play and you've got it up here, you can play a long time, you know, and there's no doubt about it. Let's talk about this past game. Was a tough loss, obviously. Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be wearing a gold blazer. He's going to have his bust in Canton, Ohio. There's no question about it. I mean, he threw for almost 350 yards, and he had a receiver, Davante Adams, caught balls for over 200, and had a running back complemented with 100 yards rushing. A lot of yards, but they had 9 possessions that ended up inside your 40-yard line, and they scored 2 touchdowns. And it's all about points. You don't win a game on yards. You win a game on points. And to hold them to 22 points and 25 overall, with counting the fifth quarter, was almost a whole quarter of time. That's the lowest number they've scored in their 4 wins. They, whatever reason, got blown out in their opener 38-3. But that's the fewest points that they've accumulated in their 4 victories. What was the key to buckling down when they got inside the 40, when they started to creep toward the red zone, when you guys held them in first and goal situations to field goals or nothing? What's the key to that?
Yeah, it's a mentality. You know, one thing we always say, man, it's a mentality before it's ever going to be reality. So if you believe that, you know, you're a true bend but don't break type of defense, you know that, you know, these offenses all over the league are built with some of the best caliber players. You know, they all, you know, most of these teams have, you know, a Hall of Fame player, you know, at quarterback, or, you know, and a top receiver and running back. And that's most of the challenges that you're going to have to come up to. And the one thing that we understand about, like, football is, like, they're going to make plays. They're paid to make plays. And we don't care at the end up, you know, let's say they get a big pass and they end up on the 1-yard line. Like, our mindset is, it's like they're not in until they're in, you know. And we're going to fight you, and we're going to scratch, claw, and bite until, you know, you go to kick a field goal. And then when you get a field goal, you know, as we've seen last week, it's not always a guarantee that you're going to make the field goal. So, you know, that's, like, our mindset. It's like, yeah, we might, you know, and then it's some correctable things that even we can say that a little bit of their success came from a little bit of our mess up. So, you know, sometimes you have to look at those plays and think about, okay, maybe if we don't turn 17 loose in the middle of the field, you know, on the coverage that we were, you know, playing to him, you know, would that, you know, be a bigger part of, you know, stopping them and even doing a little bit of better. And I think that our defense, even though we played really well in 5 quarters against a Hall of Fame quarterback and a really good wide receiver, I think we could have done better. And I think, you know, there is still a little bit of room that our defense can get a little bit better. And we just got to keep, you know, putting them together, you know, bringing the confidence, putting the confidence into each other, and, you know, playing our role and doing our job as best as we can.
Yeah, that Davante Adams, I mean, he was targeted 16 times, had 11 catches. On 6 of the 11 catches, he was double-teamed and still, you know, came up with that. That's just greatness, you know, on his part. But like you said, sometimes when you hurt yourself with, like, a miscommunication or whatever the case may be, is that what showed up on tape as much as anything? If there were just better communication in some cases, it wouldn't have been the way it was?
Yeah, just here and there. Green Bay, like, you know, I always say I want to be an offensive coordinator, you know, so I'm always studying defense. Like, I play defense now, but I'm always one of the reasons that they always motion, and they do a lot of motion and shifting. And one of the main concepts and one of the main reasons of doing that is because you want to try to make the defense communicate right before you snap the ball. And they did that a couple of times, and they would come out, and sometimes they get on the ball, and maybe just a little communication could have taken maybe a guy looking for at one guy to look into the next guy, and that would have helped us in a couple situations.
So, positives from the Green Bay tape to me, like you talked about, you know, never give in, never give up, make them earn everything. You have an example of playing the snap until the completion of the snap, the one that jumps out to me, there's two, I guess. Ogunjobi showing the effort that he showed in chasing Rodgers in the football game, the athleticism and the doggedly determined effort that he gave. And then Von Bell, Lou makes a great call. Von Bell's in the backfield unblocked to make a play on Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is paid to make people miss, and he did. And off to the races he goes for 59 yards. Von Bell, instead of pouting about it, he makes up the 5 yards that he gave on, you know, that he gave up by penetrating and 59. So see, he runs 64 yards, gets involved in the tackle, and now it's first and goal to six, and they kick a field goal. So that's a 4-point play right there, you know, when you look at it, and the effort and that kind of thing. You have those hustle things like that, and the effort that the defense is showing, that's got to be a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, that plays a big part of it, you know, because like you said, like they get paid to. They go make their plays, man. You know, there's a couple times Vaughn did that same play, got into the backfield, and made those tackles very easily.
Yep.
And, you know, just let's say for happenstance, it just happened to be at that point of the time in the game. But, yeah, he ended up missing a tackle on that play. But like you said, he was the one who – because he could have easily missed that tackle, laid on the ground, and just said, man, I missed it. I'm waiting for everybody else. But as soon as it happened, he jumped up, and he is – going and as fast as he can to try to go fix what had just happened. And with those kind of things and with those kind of efforts that you send on the field, man, the rest of that stuff can be corrected and it can be fixed. You know, sometimes you're going to get beat by a player who sometimes may just have you for a game or may just be, you know, better than you on that play. But if you can see the effort out of your players every play, no matter what the outcome is, good, bad, or indifferent, like you can do something with that team. You can make something happen.
You know, the longer you watch the game, the more you're going to see something you've never seen before, and saw something I know hadn't happened in the NFL when it occurred. 5 field goals missed in the fourth quarter in overtime, and an extra point to boot earlier in the game. But 5 field goals missed in that condensed time frame. It's never happened since the merger in 70. I've probably never happened before that, but they only kept records about it from that time frame. What's it like when you're participating in a game, you're involved in a game, you're all in the game, and field goals keep getting missed? I mean, what is that like, the highs and lows of that?
Yeah. It's a position that I wouldn't want to play, and I'm glad I'm not playing it because, like, as a kicker, man, it is a tough position. And as you can see, like, these kicks that kickers are having us take now, I remember you – here every now and then when I first started playing football, you would hear a 50 yarder being attempted like here and there, and now 50 yard attempts is like the starting point is starting to see in right. You know, and when you out there, no matter what the distance is, you know, when your time is called, like, you expect it to be the one to get out there and make it, and that doesn't make it any easier. But, you know, being a part of a game that you know, on defense, we're happy, you know, that their kicker is missing it, you know, and then, you know, our kicker get the opportunity. And, you know, it was even one that he believed that he made it, and I believed he made it. And we were all excited because we thought we had won that game, and it ended up, you know, not going through it. But when that happens, as a defensive guy, like, and, you know, one of my coaches always taught me, you know, surfboard shoulders. He always said, surfboard shoulders, you got to let it, you know, roll off right into the ocean. And you just got to, in a sense, that means just, like, keep going with the game. Don't never get too high, never get too low. Just kind of stay like the surfboard. Just, you know, go with it. It's kind of like, you know, Bruce Lee always say, like, be water, you know, be formless, you know, like, the way the game ever goes, the highs and lows, never let them get you, you know, too high or too low. Kind of stay with it, and it's never over until it's over. Just keep fighting and keep playing.
So now the challenge is to compartmentalize, you know, learn from what took place, capitalize on the positives, build on those, learn from the negatives and correct them, and move on. And you have a new opponent, the Detroit Lions. Haven't won a football game, but they have lost 2 games by the same score, 19-17. One of them to the Baltimore Ravens, a 66-yard field goal that shouldn't have happened. The clock expired. Shouldn't have had that chance. And then they make a 66-yarder to boot to beat them at the gun. And then Minnesota beats them at the gun with a field goal. This is an NFL football team that plays hard for their head coach. They really respect and like their head coach. So, I mean, you can't let what happened with Green Bay affect what's going to happen in Detroit, right? You have to compartmentalize and move on and get after it.
Exactly. Exactly. Win, loss, or indifferent. You get to, you know, sit around and think about it for 24 hours. And then after those 24 hours are up, you got to go on to the next. And it's not saying that, you know, the last game wasn't important, because it was important. It's just you can't do anything about it right now.
Right.
It ain't nothing that you can do. So, like, sitting on it, and if you want it, sitting on a win, don't do nothing to going against the Lions this week. And sitting on a loss doesn't do anything going against the Lions this week. So we got to get out there and give these people as much respect as they deserve, because they are an NFL team and they are right there. They are battling with, you know, every team that they play with. And it's just not coming, you know, forward. It's not happening for them at the end of the game. I do not sleep on these people at all. I will go out here and give these people give the Lions just as much respect as I gave the Green Bay Packers. And I will prepare for them as if they were, if it was a championship game. So, like you said, they are out there. They're playing hard. They're playing hard for their coach. And you can tell they're starting to believe it, and they know that a win is coming soon. We just got to try to make that not this week.
We talked about the triplets, the trio, with the Green Bay Packers, the quarterback, the wide receiver, the running back. Detroit, they've got Goff. They have Swift at running back. And they have a tight end as a receiver. This Hockett's a guy. He's the real deal now. I mean, he seems to be a kind of a nifty, crafty type, you know, receiver, really good hands, and he's a very good blocker. They've got some skill players too. Tell us a little bit about the Detroit Lions. I know it's early in your study, but
yeah,
you are a guy that does research.
Yeah.
What do you see?
Always do. You know, it starts off with the quarterback. You know, they just got the new quarterback this offseason, which is Goff, and you can tell he's getting – a little bit more, like week by week, you can tell he's getting more comfortable in the system. You can tell he has a little bit of the stuff they were doing when he was back with Goff. He was with the Rams. You can tell he's doing a little bit of that, and then you can tell they got a little bit of that Charger stuff in there too, with a little bit of the Anthony Wynn or Lynn. I don't want to mess his name up. So you can tell they got a little bit of that going on. And then I've played against Swift, and they also got the running back from Green Bay Packers last year, the Williams guy too. So they have a two-headed monster in the backfield. And then you get to the tight end, and which is he's coming on more and more, and you can tell he's one of God's favorite targets. So they have enough weapons. They try to find a way to flood zones very well. With they try to get 4 to 5 to a side, you can see, with all their passing concepts, so that they can give the quarterback full field reads and give him good stuff running into his viewpoint and stuff, and getting, you know, really good players in those positions to be able to get the ball in their hands. Majority of the time, they have the tight end that's like sometimes a low runner, or he likes to run a lot of option routes. They like to get him in his good matchups to try to win with his routes. And then, you know, Swift has been doing really well running the ball also and catching the ball. So, yeah, they have and, you know, I know their wide receiver core has been a little up and down. And I know one of their wide receivers probably maybe down, but the other little young guys they have out there, they got some speed back there, and they got some people who can make some things happen. So, yeah, this is the offense that we're going to have to get out there and we're going to have to play.
Yeah, the thing that that's interesting, Dan Campbell, the head coach, I want to make sure I don't mess any of these ex-players up, but Dan Campbell was a former player himself, and he played for the Lions at tight end. Dan Campbell, Deuce Staley is the assistant head coach, coaches the running backs. He played in the NFL. Mark Brunell coaches the quarterbacks, player in the NFL. Hank Fraley coaches the O-line, player in the NFL. Antoine Randall-El coaches the wide receivers, player in the NFL. So Aaron Glenn, defensive coordinator, player in the NFL. Anthony Lynn, NFL background. It's interesting that Campbell wants to have, you know, ex-players working with players. That bodes well for a guy like you, ex-player. Working with players that, you know, guys get done with their playing career and they want to coach in the National Football League. Man, Detroit's all over that concept, aren't they?
Yeah, that's really good. And, you know, I think what that does is it just gives you like the inside view. Not saying that coaches who haven't played in the NFL aren't high caliber coaches, but I think it's just something about a coach who's been in the shoes, who's been who's done it before, who knows exactly where the players are coming from. You know, it's some things that, you know, it's some things that sometimes when you're looking at it just like from an X and an O standpoint, it doesn't make your heart, you know, beat as fast as sometimes being in that position and have played in that position and know how stressful, you know, getting something done as a player is. So, and I think, you know, Coach Campbell building his whole coaching staff like that is something that I think he tried to believe in and he knows about. And that is really cool because I think I would try to build a coaching staff like that too. Majority of the time I'm already around walking around most locker rooms. I've been in two locker rooms, the Falcons and this one. And most of the players that I know are like really smart and I can tell they really care about football. I've already like scouted them. I've already told them I'm gonna call them as soon as I get a coaching job and I'm gonna bring them along with me. So he's smart with what he's doing.
No question about it. Well, good luck against the Detroit Lions. Get back on that W train. You know, get that game result in the left-hand column and that W column. Go 4-2. That would be a great start in the first six games of the season. And you've made a huge impact on the Cincinnati Bengals in a short period of time, on the field, in the locker room, in the weight room, in the cafeteria, everywhere. You've got a presence that everybody can feel. And it was great catching up with you. And good luck this week. And stay healthy, my man.
And I appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, Ricardo. Have a great day.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Hi, Dave Lapham here. Have you heard about In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, presented by First Star Logistics? Catch new episodes from the world of sports and broadcasting. Search for In the Trenches with Dave Lapham on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.